Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's up, everyone? It's The Love, The Jam, the podcast, coming to you as always with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I am doing pretty well, actually. I've had a nice, relaxing Saturday. How about you?
I am doing well. This is my last full weekend off until like June. So that's pretty good. But I'll have a day off every weekend. But for now, this has been a nice, restful Saturday. Just kind of hug out a bit, got some good sleep, and now I'm ready to talk about the Clippers. The Clippers won 128-121 against the Chicago Bulls yesterday. And what was kind of a boring game, to be honest, aside from a great third quarter. Yeah. The Clippers didn't really play particularly inspired basketball. The Bulls actually outscored them in all three quarters except for one, where they got outscored by quite a bit. The Clippers had a 45-point third quarter. In fact, they had 26 points in like the last 4 minutes and 20 seconds or so of the third quarter. After Gallinari actually missed two free throws in a row, he hit a couple of tough buckets, and the team just kind of got rolling. It got closed by a Lou Williams 4-point play, a Montrezl Harrell 3-point play. The team was kind of rolling, and what wasn't a particularly great game, they still got some nice performances. Gallo was fantastic, 27 points, 10 for 14 from the field, 7 boards, 4 for 4 from 3, 3 of 5 from the line. Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell both scored over 20. Lou had another poor shooting night, but still managed to play pretty well. Had a big 4-point play, and Trez was very, very good. 26 on 9 of 18. 8 for 8 from the line for Montrezl Harrell. But somebody we probably kind of noticed had a great game was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 17-7-7. You know, that kind of brings about something for me. Of course, he was fantastic this game. 7 of 12 from the field. 1 for 2 from 3. I always kind of thought, especially from Summer League in the beginning of the season, that Shai would be a pretty good rebounding guard. He always seemed to have a knack for rebounds and getting to the right place. He was so long. I thought that he'd be a decent rebounder in the league. He hasn't particularly been. I mean, he's only averaging 2.7 boards or so a game, I believe, and that's not particularly impressive. But his slight build, and he really just had a knack for kind of getting at rebounds, especially in Summer League, I think. And I was looking forward to him kind of translating that into the NBA regular season. It hasn't particularly happened yet, but this was a nice game for him. He had the highest plus minus of anybody on the team. He really did well running the team all game. They put him in a lot of high screen role, and he found some players for some nice passes. Practically everybody in the team feels like they got an assist from Shai. He played really well, only one turnover as well. What did you think about this game, Rob? I mean, really, it feels like the usual suspects leading the team. Gallo, Trez up to their usual antics, and Lou. But of course, like we are usually prone to do here on this podcast, we like to talk a little bit about Shai. How did Shai do this game?
I mean, I think this is probably Shai's best game of the season. He just looked very in control on both ends. I thought his defense was really, really good. He had one play where he switched, he played good defense on a point guard, switched onto Seldon, who drove, kept him on his hip, then had a two-hand block while going straight up at the rim. Just really, really impressive defense. Got his hands on a couple of steals. And on the other end, I thought he had some really nice finishes around the basket. He was aggressive when he needed to be. He hit one of his threes. I think really the only black mark on the game was just two missed free throws. Just went 2 for 4, but really everything else is good. He only had one turnover, just avoided some of those careless passes that he has sometimes. So I thought he played really, really well. It was probably the Clippers' best overall player. Gallo was probably right there with him just offensively, but I thought Shai's defense pushed him over the edge. And yeah, he's been great for a few weeks now. The month of March has been his best month of the season. I think he just looks a lot more confident, on both ends. He's not fouling quite as much. There were those stretches earlier in the season where he was always in foul trouble. It still happens sometimes, but not nearly as frequently. That's allowing him to play more. It's allowing him to be more aggressive on defense, which is why he's getting those steals. And yeah, he just looks really, really good. I'm super impressed by him. Even when he's had bad games, I'm generally impressed by his overall, just how he moves on the court and his decision-making process. And now that shots are falling and he's getting to his spots a little bit more, it's just really remarkable how good he is and how far he's already come. The sky is the limit for him, really. I think all defense, all-star level, maybe all NBA. That's probably asking a bit too much, but he's really up there in terms of rookie prospects the Clippers have probably ever had. I think Blake is really the only one in recent memory who I think is better than him. Eric Gordon, possibly. Yeah, he's a pretty special talent, I think. And Gallo, I thought was Gallo. You know, we complain about him at times. I think probably more stylistically than about his actual effectiveness.
Yeah.
There was some confusion on the last podcast where I think people, there were some comments about how we didn't appreciate Gallo's post-game in ISO. I mean, I think he's effective. I just don't like how it looks. It's not very pretty. And I do think it kind of disrupts the flow of the offense a little bit, though that's, you know, it's hard to really say that. I mean, that's very apocryphal just based on the eye test. But he was great. He seemed like he hit every shot, just super confident, very in control. And I mean, I was never really concerned the Clippers were going to lose, even when they looked pretty bad at times in the first half. I just always thought they were going to make a run at some point and win it. I don't think it's great they're doing this, even though at this point they're probably safe in terms of the playoff, you know, falling out. They have such a big lead on the Kings. If they really do want to avoid the Warriors in the first round, they're going to need to win like a lot of games, and they're not going to do that by kind of taking the edge off. They're a team that really needs to play hard all the time and execute in order to win games, especially against teams that are not the Bulls.
Yeah, and this was definitely a game they kind of sleptwalked through most of the game. They were down 6 in that first half to end that first half. They didn't look particularly sharp, but I do feel like Shea was engaged the whole game. Gallo was too, even his kind of lazy-looking way. I don't know, even know if it was completely for a lack of effort, but they were – the Bulls, I think on defense, the Bulls just got whatever they – on offense, rather, the Bulls got whatever they wanted for a very long time until that third quarter. They even scored 37 in the fourth, which is a lot for a Chicago team.
But yeah, they were getting – they were scoring like every possession.
Yeah. But still, I guess they can kind of – you can kind of take it easy against the Bulls. This was not the first time the Clippers took it easy against the Bulls. It almost cost them a win in Chicago in what was one of the worst games of all time. So that they took it easy against them this time, I guess, shouldn't be that surprising. Boy, that game in Chicago was so awful. I wish I could. This wasn't that bad. No, not that bad. That was a nice win, though. And I do think we should maybe just let everybody know that, hey, we love Gallinari. I love Danilo Gallinari. He's like 19 for 26 in these last couple of games he's played. He's a game off where we desperately missed him against the Blazers.
That was an eye-opener.
Yeah, so I don't want people to think that we don't appreciate him. It's just the way he does isolations in the post, while it can be effective, it obviously stops this kind of everybody touches the ball kind of attitude the Clippers have. I don't think that's deniable. And I still think a Lou Williams pick and roll gets more high percentage shots at the end of the day than a Gallinari post up on like the wing or whatever. So that's fine. I think you can still love Gallo and still realize that sometimes we shouldn't just dump it to him and let him do Gallo ball to close a game. It makes me super nervous when we do that, especially when he's just kind of hunting for fouls, which he's good at drawing, but that's maybe not the best way to play tight games down the stretch. Anything else to talk about this game? Zubat
he was good in the second half. I thought the first half was rough. Robin Lopez was really going at him.
Yeah.
But I thought he stepped up his game in the second half. I don't really have too much to say about the Doc Boylan ejection thing. It's not really basketball related. It didn't really have much of an impact. But I did like that Rex Kalamian put Zubac back in to close the game. I think it was like the last 4 minutes he put Zubac back in. And I really, really like that because even though Montrez is scoring a lot, the Bulls were also scoring like every possession. And Zubac is a much better defender than Harrell. He protects the rim. He slides his feet well. I don't think he's ever going to be an all-defense level player, you know, even close, really. But he's a solid defender, which for a 21-year-old center is pretty good. And he's made a noticeable impact on that end. So I thought in the second half he was really quite good. He was a big reason for the Clippers' third quarter. They were finally getting stops, and a lot of it was due to his defense. Though also, you know, Pat Beverly and Shea on the perimeter helped. But he's impressive. I'm not quite as blown away as a lot of people I think I see on Twitter. But he's definitely a pretty solid rotation player, and they got him for free. So just remains an amazing deal. They would not be making this run if they still were starting Marcin Gortat or Mike Muscala.
I think Yovan Buha put up a really nice post on The Athletic, a really nice article kind of detailing Zubac's importance on defense. And while he doesn't get a lot of blocks, he is a very smart kind of vertical defender, and that's a really nice skill to possess. And I think more than anything, that's kind of what that show, that article did. And while I get frustrated with his, you know, his poor ability to sometimes catch passes or go up with strength at the rim, and maybe he might dribble a little more up on the top on those screen rolls that he should, or those little pass offs that the Clippers like to do. He does a lot of things where I feel like he might just need more chemistry. He seems to be poor. I think it was Don McLean that pointed out that he wasn't the best at picking up those bounce passes, and maybe people should just throw it at his chest. But on those pick and rolls, you have to be able to pick up bounce passes. You can't
just do it.
You have to be able to do that as a big man. So a lot of times he's just at the rim and he'll miss shots. So, I mean, he's been frustrating at times, but maybe these are just things that he needs to work on. I definitely think he can get better at a lot of his little flaws. And while we have Trez, at least, he's definitely like a nice starter, like a nice guy to split time. And whether or not he can be a legit, legit starting center, I think he can be. But I think he does need to prove it a little bit more rather than just a placeholder center. And I think he can do it, but I do think he needs to have some more reps. I definitely hope the Clippers can sign him cheap, maybe around the $6 to $10 million a year. I think that's a decent price tag for him. How much do you think is too much for Zubac for like a multi-year deal, considering he's probably not going to show us too much more over the last dozen games and then in the playoffs?
It depends on the years, I think. You know, considering he's young, I think trying to get him for, you know, 3 years would be nice. But I think anything over 10 is probably an overpay, because then you're just paying for pure upside, not what he's really providing you right now. And the Clippers have to be careful with their cap and their superstar chase. So I think I'd probably go anywhere up to 12, but 10 to 12 is kind of not great. Anything over 12, I'd probably say no. I think ideally, you know, 8 or 9 million, maybe like a 324, 327, if that's possible. I think that'd be pretty good. He's clearly a solid rotation center, but as you said, I don't think he's really a true starting caliber center yet. The guy, kind of guy you play a lot of minutes against every team, a guy, you know, not even 30 minutes a game, but even just 25 a game consistently. I don't think he's really there yet because of those offensive weaknesses in particular. Just doesn't really have a ton of scoring except when he's spoon-fed, and the Clippers kind of need more of that from him sometimes. So he's good, though. He's been a very pleasant surprise. I knew he'd improve this year in the Lakers, but I didn't realize that he was this good defensively. So, it's just been great watching him compared to Gortat and even Boban, honestly. Like, I love Boban, but Zubac is clearly better.
Definitely. And it's definitely a good thing that we have Trez behind him. So whenever he is not doing the things offensively we need him to, we can always bring Trez in. And another good thing is that we have Trez next year too. So I think he's a good fit with this team. Hopefully we can bring him back for a relatively cheap deal due to those offensive deficiencies. So I think that pretty much does it for that game. Landry Shamet had some big threes in the third quarter. He continues to just be fantastic. He made some nice cuts to the basket, missed a couple of layups. Had some nice passes. I think Shamet just continues to be a really nice player. I think ideally, I think Sabrina wrote an article on Clips Nation with some of her statistical deep dives and mentioned how good Shamet is at guarding shooters. And I think I've noticed that too. He's not a particularly, he's a terrible defender overall. He's not a good defender. But when he needs to chase shooters, I feel like he knows what to do. He knows how to get to them. He has long arms. So that's a nice thing, that at least when we have a certain matchups where there's somebody that's a designated shooter, that we could think about putting Shamet on him. Those guys are usually smaller builds too, so they can't just back him in and score on him. So it's nice that he has that skill at least, or I don't know if I call it a skill, but he has that capability of staying with those quick moving guards, because he does move quick to the jump. So that's a nice thing that Shamet can do, at least in the future. We don't need to always be terrified about who he's going to guard, who we're going to hide him on if he does have a certain matchup. So that was a nice thing to know. Shamet's been shooting just lights out from three off screens.
Yeah, his shooting is absurd.
He's so good. I'm so, so happy he's a Clipper. Him and Shea together is going to be fun for a very long time, I hope. So, yeah, and that's mostly it. Anything else you want to talk about this game before we maybe touch on the Blazers game and very briefly on the Celtics game?
Not particularly. I mean, I think the Bulls are pretty bad. I wrote that it was kind of a trap game. They have some talent. LaVine is a scary scorer. Porter is just a good player. Markkanen has been cold lately. The Clippers were lucky. He was very ineffective. I think he's kind of out of shape or just in poor condition right now. No, I don't have too much else to say. It was a game they really needed to win, not in terms of a must win for getting into the playoffs or anything, but just for their chances of getting a non-8 seed. They need to win these games against really bad lottery teams, and they pulled this one off. The Blazers game, I really don't have too much to say about that either. Yeah. I thought they played fine. CJ McCollum got really hot in the fourth quarter. By the way, not shout out, but hope he's okay. He actually left the Blazers game today with a knee injury. He's getting an MRI tomorrow. So hopefully he's okay. Nothing too serious. But yeah, I mean, he gets hot. He's a scorer. He makes a lot of shots. And he got really hot, and the Clippers couldn't guard him, and they lost the game. I thought they mostly played fine. They didn't play great, but they played fine until that fourth quarter, when not only did their defense on McCollum lag, but I thought their offense also got rushed, and it kind of stopped really running their sets and just were trying to keep up, and it did not work. But, you know, it was the second half of a back-to-back after a really, really, not cathartic, but it was a huge win against the Celtics, and I wasn't really expecting them to come out with that same energy and that same sense of purpose again. So I was really hoping they could win one of those games. They won one, and I was fine. The Blazers game would have probably been preferable to win, obviously, because of standings and conferences. But really, a win is a win at this point in the season. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't think I really have too much else to say about that one.
Yeah, me neither. It was a nice win against the Celtics. The Blazers loss was rough. What are you going to do? CJ McCollum got hurt today. Looks like he just kind of stepped. He got stepped on his butt and then just kind of twisted his knee a little bit. It was really hard to see from a lot of those angles, but hopefully it's just a strain. He's going to get an MRI. It'll show whether or not how bad of a strain it is. So we'll see. Lots of positive vibes over to the Blazers. You know, they're ahead of us, but you never want to see anybody get hurt like that. That was just pretty much what you expected. The Clippers were playing pretty good most of the game, stayed ahead. You know, I think Doc made a mention that the Clippers were up by like 7 or 8 or so in the second quarter, and that was probably their time right there to kind of win the game if they could, because they were due to have a lapse in the fourth quarter. It's very common to be on the second game of a back-to-back and then the second half just not have the legs to stay in it. So the Clippers are going to be very fortunate to catch a lot of tired teams, especially during this stretch. So it was their turn to be the tired one. So not much you can really say about that. The Blazers are a good regular season team. They win games like that. So the Celtics game, though,
was awesome.
Was a lot of fun. I didn't expect the Clippers to just completely throttle the Celtics. Was probably one of the best offensive games the Clippers have had. 39, they had scored 37, 39, and 39 points in the second, third, and fourth quarters. We're just completely giving it to the Celtics. And I don't even think the Celtics played that badly. I think Bill Simmons and his Ringer crew went to this game. They pretty much did the same thing. They felt like the Celtics played hard. The Clippers just kicked their asses. So Gallinari, everybody was hot. Nobody really shot, you know, under 50% even. You know, Gallo went 9 for 12. Shamet 4 for 6. Zubat 6 for 7. Shea 4 for 7. Bev 4 for 8, Lou 14 for 20.
Yeah.
Trez 8 for 12. Everybody just shot lights out. They shot 6. Wow, is that real? They shot 61.5% as a team.
Yeah, it was insane.
Just like an absolute clinic. I don't know if the Clippers can play better offensively than that, you know.
I know that they can't.
Offensively, rather. They were just lights out. That was incredible. I think they scored something similar against the Knicks. But I think the Celtics are a little bit better than the Knicks, so yeah.
Yes, yeah. It was just a great win. Lou and Gallo in particular were spectacular. Lou got the record in that game for most points off the bench, a record he's just going to keep adding to,
right,
which I'm guessing nobody will ever pass. Because I mean, you think if he's playing another 4 or 5 seasons, that's going to be like a 4,000 or 5,000 more points probably on top of this record. So, just a great, great Lou Williams game. He kept driving. He did not settle for jumpers. Boston bigs were too slow, especially when he had Baines or Tice. He was just going right by them in the pick and roll. Super patient, made great passes. Yeah, I don't have too much to say about that game because it was almost a week ago. And you know, for some of these games, it would really be great to do like a reaction pod, like the night of, but that would take a lot of time. And I just don't know if we'd have that much insightful to say. It would just be a lot of, wow, like great win.
Yeah. Nice job, guys. Really great passes. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but it was a wonderful game. They just are not going to play better offense. And I actually thought their defense was really, really good. Shea's defense on Kyrie Irving was great. Kyrie made some tough shots, but Shea made him work a lot. They played good defense on Al Horford as well. It was just a great game by the Clippers. One of the best games they've played probably in the post-Lob City era, I'd say. I'd need to do a compilation, but definitely a top 5 post-Lob City game just in terms of games played. In terms of meaning, they didn't really have that much meaning. They seem to have secured a playoff spot. The Celtics are in another conference, but it was just a great performance and super, super fun to watch. It was just watching Lou pile on and get the record and then just keep scoring was great. So, and a lot of people were watching that game. I think got them a little bit of national exposure. Yeah. They had a bunch of appearances this week on The Jump and all these big podcasts and sports shows and stuff. So, yeah, it was a good week for the Clippers. They went 2-1. I think I predicted they'd go 1-2, and I was fine with 1-2. So, one and a couple Kings losses, I think, have secured the playoffs. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, it looks like the magic number is 8. I think I looked it up yesterday, and the Kings and the Clippers are in play today. So, seems very attainable. I'm still nervous. I don't care. I still want to know that they've clinched. And once they clinch, then I'll start really looking for playoff positioning. But I'm still a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. You never know. The Clippers, you never know. I always get nervous about these things. But I think the Clippers are more or less a near lock to make the postseason now, which is awesome. Let's just hope they don't draw the Warriors. The Nuggets won today. So they're still stuck in that second seed, putting some pressure on the Warriors. The Warriors just throttled Oklahoma City, helped us out, actually. The Oklahoma City now has the same conference record as the Clippers, and they're only 2 games up. 2 games up as far as the loss column goes. So the Clippers are not that far from Oklahoma City. The Blazers are probably a little too far ahead of us to catch, but they, like we just said, they did lose CJ McCollum for who knows how long, most likely at least. Guessing at least it's going to be a week injury at the very least. So we'll see how long McCollum's hurt. That might help. That might hurt the Blazers as far as the standings go. I doubt we'll catch them. The Jazz also won today. They blew out Brooklyn, who we're facing tomorrow. So a lot of games around the league. There's a ton of just standings watch every night. There's always kind of a relevant game going on. So up this week, we do have a few interesting games coming up.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the schedule this week, Rob? How do you see us doing?
So there are four games this week. The final two games of this super long homestand tomorrow against Brooklyn, a late Sunday game, 6 o'clock, and then Tuesday against the Pacers. And then two road games, Eastern Conference, Cleveland and New York. I think they go 3-1. You know, I think Brooklyn is solid, but D'Angelo Russell has lost his magic touch, as I knew he would. And they're kind of slumping. Caris LeVert hasn't looked quite the same since he came back from an injury. They're obviously much better than Chicago, but I think at home with a day of rest, I think they're definitely beatable. They're on the second game of a back-to-back on the road. And a decent amount of traveling, too, from Utah. I mean, it's not super far, but I mean, that's what, a couple, two and a half hour flight, time difference. I think that should be a game the Clippers win. The Pacers are good. Like, even without Oladipo, they're good. And the one thing they do is that they are probably the only team in the NBA that match the Clippers in terms of intensity and just fight on a game-to-game basis. They play hard every single game. They're never out of a game, and they always execute. They're very good. I don't think they have a prayer at a deep Eastern Conference run without Oladipo. They just miss his creation and scoring and star power. But just on a game-by-game basis in the regular season, they're really good. Probably a better overall team than the Clippers. A very similar group, really, just in terms of a lot of veteran role players and a couple young guys. You know, Miles Turner is a defensive player, and I think Sabonis is probably going to win most improved. Bogdanov just having a huge year. I think that's probably a loss for the Clippers. Though it wouldn't surprise me if they got a win. And then at Cleveland, at New York are obviously games the Clippers need to win. Both those teams are atrocious.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of nervous about the Cleveland game. I don't think they're going to lose, but just Kevin Love is back. Colin Sexton might have some extra juice against somebody like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who often got kind of praise over Sexton a lot in the earlier stages of the season. That game kind of makes me a little nervous. It's a road game. I still remember when the Cleveland Cavaliers lost like 17 games in a row, and the Clippers went into Cleveland and lost an overtime game against Mo Williams and the Cavs. That was the first post-LeBron season. It was really embarrassing. Yeah. So playing in Cleveland kind of gives me memories of that. So the Cavs also just recently blew out the Raptors at home, who probably weren't prepared to play them. So I'm kind of nervous about that game. The Pacer game is kind of nerve-wracking, too. Nice to see Darren Collison back. But you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Clippers win every game this week. Let's wow. see.
I can see it. I wouldn't bet against it. I think they probably lose one somewhere, with the most likely being the Pacers. But it wouldn't shock me if they went 4-0. They kind of need to, because the Jazz are a half game ahead of them and have a super easy schedule the rest of the season. And the Spurs are apparently just never losing again.
Yeah, what's going on with the Spurs?
I don't understand. I've given up. This is like the third year in a row I predicted the Spurs would fall off. And I think I thought they would miss the playoffs last year as well. And next year I'm not going to bet against them. No matter how shitty their summer is and how little talent they seem to have on their roster, I'm not going to bet against them making the playoffs. It's absurd. They've won 8 games in a row now.
This is ridiculous.
It is. I think the Clippers could still possibly catch them. But yeah, they need 4-0 would be great. 3-1 would, I think, still be pretty good for getting there. And a 3-1 week would also just about clinch a playoff spot. It wouldn't be quite the magic number, but it would get them within all shadow of a doubt, a 3-1 would. But yeah, I mean, I think it's doable. I'm not as worried for the Cavs game. Love is a bit scary. And I do think the Sexton-Shai thing will be a bit of a factor, but I think Shai will get up for it too. Really, I don't think it'll just be Sexton. I think Shai's actually a really good match for him. He's bigger and longer, should be able to contest his shots, shoot over him. And Sexton's the type of guy who I think might play some reckless defense, foul. The Cavs are just so bad. Even with Love, I can't really worry about them too much. The Knicks, honestly, just because they got destroyed by the Clippers last time, I think they might be a little angry and might be a little vengeance hungry, but I mean, they're also just such a train wreck that the Clippers need to win that. No matter how much those two teams might want to win those. I'm going to say 3-1. I just don't think they'll win the Pacers game, but I could see 4-0.
I kind of want to say 3-1 just because I don't want to jinx them from going 4-0. But I think that they could go 4-0 very much. The Spurs have a kind of a tough stretch. The next 3 out of 4 games, they play the Warriors and they play the Heat, not so bad. Then at Houston and at the Celtics. But after that, they just have a cupcake of a rest of the way. Hornets, Cavs, Kings, Hawks, Nuggets once, won't be easy. Wizards, Cavs, and Mavericks. That's their closing schedule. So they have a tough little stretch this week. But then after that, they probably should be good to go. So if the Clippers do want to catch them, like you mentioned, they really do need to go 4-0 because they do have some tough games to close the season. So hopefully the Clippers can take advantage of this stretch and win some games.
I think the only thing we wanted to talk about, you mentioned Shane Gallo, was that the only really notable occurrence was Wilson Chandler returning from injury and playing rotation minutes. In the Blazers game, he got minutes at the 4 because Gallo rested and he played backup 4 minutes. But then in the game against the Bulls, he played at small forward alongside Green, Montrezl Harrell, Garrett Temple, and Lou Williams, sending Ty Wallace, beloved Ty Wallace, to the bench. And I was not a fan. I was really, really not a fan of it going in, and it looked about how I thought it would. I just, in a vacuum, I think you could make an argument even now that Chandler's a better player than Wallace, just in a sheer vacuum. I don't know if I would make that argument. I think I would listen to it. But for what the Clippers need in that second unit, alongside Trez and Lou, they need defense and they need ball handling. And Wilson Chandler, especially at small forward, offers neither of those things. I thought Lou, one of the reasons why he struggled was he really had to handle the ball even more than usual without Ty Wallace in the game. And it just looked like a lot of wear and tear for him. And theoretically, there should be more spacing with Chandler, but I didn't really see any more spacing. I don't think the floor was any more spread. I thought the defense was a step slower. So I'm just really not a fan. What did you think of that?
I'm not a fan of it. I think more than anything, this season has kind of taught us, especially with these little fringe rotations, that Doc values shooting almost more than anything as far as his offense goes. He often closed with Shamet over Shea during times where we weren't certain about that. It's because Shamet can spread the floor. He's been choosing Wilson Chandler now over Ty. That's because Chandler can spread the floor. I think he's really liked to go with the 4 shooters around the big mentality. Even with Shea shooting like he has been, we've seen Shamet get the call over him entirely because of shooting, entirely because Doc thinks Lou will and Montrez pick and roll is the centerpiece of the offense, and he just wants it surrounded with shooting. So it's pretty predictable, you know, when you think about Doc, that this would happen. Is he going to bench? Is he going to bench the...
We knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, this was going to happen. He's not going to bench the journeyman veteran, Garrett Temple, who's probably reminds him of an Avery Bradley type, much better than Bradley in every way because Bradley's just a trash player. But he's not going to bench Temple. Sorry, it's a little bit of a jab at Bradley, terrible player. Good riddance. But I think we both kind of figured this would happen. I agree with you. I think Ty Wallace's ball handling is particularly important alongside Lou. It's just going to make Lou more tired to close these games. But I can't say that I'm not that surprised. Maybe
I'm not surprised at all. I don't think it's disastrous.
Yeah.
Against certain teams, it might actually work because the Clippers are often undersized, and Chandler versus Temple, obviously, versus Wallace, obviously adds a lot of size. And it does add some shooting. So on nights when he's hitting and the Clippers really have the floor spaced, it could look really good. I think on a game-to-game basis, it's probably a worse fit. And certainly the first night that they played, that did not look particularly good. But we'll see. It's not a massive, massive failure of a decision, like starting Bradley over Beverly for the entirety of the season, which was just a train wreck that we were all watching in real life. It's not that bad, but Chandler just has not been, I understand it's been three games. He hasn't played very much. I just don't know what he really adds outside of some shooting. And even then, he's not like a great shooter. So, you know, but we're also Ty Wallace stands.
Right,
I think
right.
His defense is really, really good. His offense has really kind of fallen apart this season. He's missed a lot of those little floaters and layups that he hit last year, which is not surprising because those are really tough shots. And he doesn't have like a ton of size or athleticism to get to the rim and finish strong. But I think he's still been a little unlucky with those, and more of them would start to fall. But really, it's his defense, it's his ball handling, and Chandler's downgrade on both of those fronts. But I don't think I really have much else to mention about the Clippers. That's really the only thing. I guess we could say Luke has basically been ruled out for the rest of the season. Doc like all but confirmed that. The only thing that's puzzling to me is that a couple weeks ago, it seemed like he was coming back. Didn't it?
Right. Like, it did. He was practicing with the team and everything. I don't know.
He was questionable for a couple games.
Yeah.
There were some reports that he was close, and then all of a sudden he's out. Like, I don't know what's going on with him. I'm waiting for somebody to break the story, but it's very odd. I can't really remember anything quite like this before, at least with the Clippers.
I have no clue. I have no idea. I mean, I know knees are tricky, so he might have just tested it and just wasn't ready to go. It would be great if we could just get Luke for very cheap for next year based on that. He was only on a one-year deal, right? So it would be nice. I don't know. Maybe he's just cooked. That's just tough to say.
Yeah. It's too bad. I really wish the season had gone better for him. He's such a good defender. Great guy. Just one of the all-time great people in the NBA. With like the outreach he's done to Africa and all the humanitarian stuff.
Yeah, he's pretty much discovered players. Like Embiid said that Luke was a huge deal to him.
Siakam, I think.
Yeah, he discovered Siakam, and Siakam's going to be a star, man. He's going to be really good. It's
too bad. I hope he's healthy. I hope just his life is going okay. And that this isn't some weird, like, I don't even know what it might be, but I hope it's nothing serious or something that will like affect his life after basketball or anything.
Right. I'm hoping in the off season we'll get some more details on what really happened with Luke. I'm guessing it's just under wraps right now. We'll see. I did want to mention, it's true that Ty Wallace was kind of falling off a bit. He was missing a lot of shots at the rim and just not taking it to the hole like we were used to. So I could kind of get why maybe Doc was a little soured on him. Still, I love Ty. I also wanted to mention Tyndarius Thornwell hit a three-pointer against the Celtics, just to mention it.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Long, quiet Tyndarius Thornwell bandwagon.
Right. Get back on, everyone. He hit a three-pointer. I think he's coming on. He also missed two shots at the rim to end the third quarter.
Yeah, this Trez fired up.
Right.
It's crazy because he averaged a lot of points per game in his last year at South Carolina. Like, he was the SEC player of the year, I think.
Yeah.
I need to go back and check, but I'm pretty sure he averaged over 20 points a game. And watching him play in the NBA, I just don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, wasn't he a good three-point shooter even? Did he shoot at least?
That was fluky. That was always fluky. But, like, he had, like, these little mid-range shots that he would hit. Like, he was a good scorer, and I just don't know what has happened. I like his mentality a lot. Like, he's always aggressive and he's attacking, but he can't finish at the rim, and he just has no in-between game. He never stops for a little mid-range pull-up. Those are the kind of shots he hit a lot at South Carolina, so I don't know. He's honestly a guy who I don't know how much he's played in the G League, but I think he might have benefited from a lot more time in the G League this year instead of just sitting on the bench and getting, you know, 10 seconds to defend possessions at the end of quarters and stuff. I think he really needs some real development time for his offensive game.
I mean, he's not playing with like our all-stars in the G League, Delgado, Motley, and
Delgado has been ridiculous apparently. I mean, Motley too, but I mean, yeah, he should be down there. Like, the G League is not some horrible, you know, place of basketball where it's some shame to be sent there. He's a second-round pick in his second year who's not getting playing time. And I like his defense. I like his mentality, but he needs to get better at offense in the NBA. Great. If he's going to stick around.
Definitely. I think we can get to Twitter questions.
Let's do questions. So the first one is, let me scroll down, from Rick Carrick. Sorry, I never know how to pronounce your name. I'll ask you on Twitter. are the Clippers interested in trading for AD this summer? I think so. I don't know how real it is that he said he would re-sign there, or how real it is that he's not going to re-sign anywhere and just go to free agency in two summers, regardless of where he's traded to. I don't know how true any of that is. But, yeah, I'm assuming the Clippers have interest.
I think they're interested in Anthony Davis. Yeah. I mean, if we could trade Gallo and just assets for him, that would be great. I mean, I think that's that seems like a reasonable kind of offer. If I don't know. I'm not sure how much I wouldn't.
It would have to be
right.
Gallo. You have to think they would ask for one of Shamit or Shea. They'd probably ask for both. And the Clippers would – I don't know if the Clippers say no. Like, that's the thing. It's Anthony Davis. But it would be really tough to give up both of them for Anthony Davis. But, yeah, I mean, they have interest. Next question is from Le Libanais, I think. Ty's future in the organization. So we were just talking about Ty Wallace. I'm not sure. I don't think Doc is a huge fan. At least I would be playing him more than – what Doc has this season, but they liked him a lot last season. And if nothing else, he's a cheap rotation level player on a team that wants to add really big salary cap guys, which means that he's a very useful piece to keep around. I think he'll probably be on the team next year. I mean, after that, who knows, but I don't think he has a ton of trade value and they have really no reason to cut him. He seems like a good locker room guy. So I'm guessing he's on the team next year, but I wouldn't bet on him being like a cornerstone of the future or anything.
Right. I mean, Ty and Thornwell actually are both only $1.6 million next year. So those are super cheap. You'd imagine if we do somehow lose pieces because we signed, say, a Kawhi Leonard, Ty for a max contract, that Ty Wallace and even Thornwell would be pretty valuable players to have off your bench. Ty Wallace, at the very least, has shown he's a bench player. So I think he'd be a valuable piece. So. Yeah. I don't see, you know, I definitely see like he could be a bench player, a semi-important one off the Clipper bench next year. So hopefully that's the case.
Next questions are from my dad. He actually sent me four questions. We'll go to the first two because apparently I missed his questions last time. So he's upset. but the last two are ones we've talked about before. So his first two are, one, Doc as coach of the year, and two, after the Spurs win tonight, do the Clippers have a real shot at the sixth seed? I think the second question is, yeah, they still have a real shot. They just need the Spurs to lose a couple games and lose that rhythm, and they just need to keep winning a fair amount of theirs. I don't think they're out of it by any means. I think the Spurs are, what, like a game up and a loss up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not out of reach. They're right there, but
yeah,
I wouldn't bet on it, but they can do it. Doc as coach of the year, he's going to get some votes. He will, and I think he deserves votes. But I think there are other coaches who probably have better claims. I think Budenholzer is
It's going to be Bud.
Yeah, it's going to be him probably. I think what McMillan has done in Indiana is really impressive.
Yeah.
I'd probably also vote for him over Doc, to be quite honest. But I think Doc will get a fair amount of second and third votes. He might even get a few first. He'll be on the ballots. He'll be in coach of the year when people do their award nominations and ballot lists and stuff. He'll be mentioned pretty substantially, I'm sure, as a candidate and get some down ballot votes. He's been great. As always, there are quibbles with the rotation, like we've mentioned today, the Ty Wallace, Wilson Chandler thing. Obviously, the Avery Bradley thing was just horrible, but he's been really good. The Clippers have played above their ceiling. They play hard. They play together. He's gotten their offense to do great things this season, even without, you know, a truly premier star player. So I think he deserves to be in that conversation.
Yeah, I think Bud's going to win, and it's deservedly so. I mean,
yeah, he's, I agree.
Pretty much. They also lost Brogdon for a couple of months, which is going to be rough for them, especially in the postseason, because Brogdon has been – one of the most efficient, it's probably one of the most efficient seasons, like almost ever, right? He's had really good splits this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty low efficient, low usage.
Usage, right, right.
So, you know, obviously it's still pretty impressive. I think defense, extra ball handling, yeah, they're going to miss him. I mean, he's probably their fourth best player, maybe.
Probably.
Giannis, Bledsoe, Middleton. I'd say he's probably fourth compared to, like, Mirotic or Brook Lopez, so... Yeah, that's bad. There have been some injuries lately. There was McCollum today. Brogdon was announced today. Exum, though, I mean, Exum isn't that important, obviously, but like
Exum was healthy. I didn't even realize
he was healthy for like 2 weeks, and then color tendon.
Oh no! You gotta be kidding me.
It's bad. Yeah, it's bad.
Oh jeez.
Really, I've never been a huge fan of his game, to be quite honest.
I like Exum.
He's like a funny, nice guy. Everybody seems to be rooting for him in Utah. So it's too bad. I mean, this is like his third or fourth knee injury. It's tough at this point. But anyway, next question from @DonsClipsPats. I almost feel obliged whenever I see this tweet, the one asking for questions, even if I have no questions. If we get Kawhi, is our window open, presuming KD goes east with just Gallo? I can't see any other free agents that would move the dial while allowing our youngsters to develop. It depends on what the window means. If they get Kawhi and keep Gallo and literally everybody else of importance on their team, they run it back with Kawhi starting in place of probably, I guess, Beverly, because I guess it would be Shea, Shamit, Kawhi, Gallo, Zubats next season and not Beverly. That's probably a 55-win team, maybe. If you have Lou, Trez, Beverly off the bench, you keep maybe one of Green or Temple. I mean, I think that's a window to get, like, the conference finals, maybe. I still don't know if that's beating the Warriors, to be honest, or the Bucks. Or, yeah, I mean, I think that would be a rung below the top teams in the NBA. But, I mean, that would be a 50-55-win team, a team that could legitimately win a round or two in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah. The good thing about that team is that Kawhi's prime is going to last at least a few more years. Yeah. And all those other guys are going to get better. Gallo's going to be off the books and we can make another swing at another player. Still have assets. So it's a good team. I think, you know, with how the West is right now, I feel like after the Warriors, the second best team in the West is like wide open. So especially with how Chris Paul will be declining next year too.
Yeah.
So
and Harden, I mean, is not a spring chicken and he's played like a million minutes.
Yeah.
I think obviously he's going to be amazing for years to come, but it would not surprise me if this was his peak and he starts declining a little after this. And the rest of their team outside of Capella is also old. The Rockets, I don't think they're like going anywhere in terms of being a really good team, but they're probably going to decline every year unless Morey pulls some more magic and gets some younger blood in there. You know, Austin Rivers is after Capella.
We forgot about Austin Rivers, so they should probably be the best
he's
team.
He's like the next youngest player who's in the rotation, I think.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, if they get Kawhi, I certainly think, you know, they could be a 2 or 3 seed and win 50, a lot of games, but true title contenders, I don't know. It would need a leap from at least one of the young guys, which is certainly possible. I mean, if Shea becomes an all-defense/all-star-level guy in his second year, I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't be shocked. The same goes true if Shamit becomes truly, like, one of the best, deadliest three-point shooters in the NBA. He's already pretty close. Like, if he makes that leap to hitting, you know, 45% on 8 attempts a game instead of 6.5, or adding a little bit more off the dribble game, whatever, I could see them being true title contenders, but I wouldn't bet on it. The next question is from Whammy. It's asking about Danny Chow's latest article on The Ringer about how Doc Rivers wanted the Clippers to be Spursian. Are the Clippers becoming the next Spurs? I think that's probably what they're going for, just a team that's always good, always in the playoffs, always relevant, has like a very particular mindset. You know, they're trying to build this ethos of tough, chip on the shoulder, gritty. Whereas the Spurs were always kind of classy, like top down, you know, put on your suit, go to work every day. And that was a lot Tim Duncan as well as Pop. So I think in that way, they're trying to be Spurgeon and just really building a team mentality and getting players that match that. But I mean, they have a long, long way to go to become the Spurs. The Spurs have made the playoffs for what, 22 seasons in a row now or something?
22 this year. I think they're going to tie the freaking some old ass team from when there were 10 teams in the league. I think they're insane.
They're insane. They're not going to be the Spurs anytime soon, but I do think that's what the Clippers are going for.
Yeah, obviously any team really wants to be the Spurs, to be honest. I love Wabby, but yeah, they're going for that. I mean, and they're building the culture. They've erased all of that old juju from the Sterling era Clippers. Yeah. There's like nobody left. I mean, maybe Jason Powell, who's just unfuckwithable, I guess. So
but everybody loves him. Texts him like every day or something.
Yeah, this says Jason very lovingly a lot on these podcasts. So whatever, maybe we just don't know what we're talking about. Luka Mbamute has been out all year with knee soreness, but maybe we don't know what we're talking about. Gallo has been so healthy this year. So like, what can we say about Jason Powell? I remember both of us said that if Gallo played 60 games, then we'd make the playoffs. He's played 58 so far. So
I thought 60 would be the best we could possibly hope for. I don't think anybody could have expected or wanted a better season from Gallo.
He might hit 70. Can you believe that? That's incredible.
He would need to play every single remaining game, which yeah. I don't think he does. I think
he won't, but still.
I think he hit 65, though, which is
jeez,
awesome. The third most of his career and the most in 6 years. So awesome. 7 years, yeah.
And I'm glad he missed most of his games when we had Tobias, because we would miss him a lot. Yeah,
very true. So if we lost him now, it would be bad.
So hopefully he looks very good. So I'm glad that ankle sprain wasn't as bad as it could have been. So that's good. That's good. Yeah. I kind of wonder, was the ankle sprain really a thing? I didn't see him get an ankle sprain. I wonder if they were just like, if Gallo just told him, he's like, no, it was an ankle sprain, just so people couldn't get it. I think it was
part of just rest.
Really. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, two more questions. So mm-hmm. one from @BennyBFly. What's the salary cap situation looking like heading into the summer? What type of deals will Pat and Zubac command? Salary cap is they're going to have a lot of space. We already talked about Zubac. I think Pat Beverly is really interesting because he's been so good this year, but he's not young and he's not very flashy. He's a fit on a lot of teams, though, but I don't think any team will pay a lot for him. I'd say probably similar to Zubac, honestly, probably like $330 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally from Redondo Mike, will the Spurs ever lose a game? Ever lose again? Sorry. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure they will. They're probably going to lose. I haven't looked at their schedule, but at some point they're going to lose.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that. Oh, they play the Warriors next. There we go. They're playing the Warriors on Monday. If they win that game, like I just don't even know. And then the Heat. And then they play the Rockets and then the Celtics. They're going to lose to one of the Warriors, Rockets or Celtics. If they don't, then they're winning the finals.
Yeah. Like I was just saying, this is a big week for the Clippers and the Spurs. If the Clippers can go 4-0 and the Warriors – and the Spurs, let's say, go 2-2, then the seventh seed is in real play. If the Spurs somehow go 3-1, road games at Houston and at the Celtics, that would be a tall task to go 3-1. Then I'm just going to say we're not going to catch them.
That would be impressive. That would just be hats, you know, tip of the hat.
Hats off. Yeah. And like I mentioned, they're closing with the Hornets, Cavs, Kings, Hawks. Yeesh. One game in Denver, Wizards, Cavs, and Mavericks. So they could legitimately nearly run the table after that Celtics game. So
you have to hope that they lose like two or three of these games and just throws their mojo off. And
yeah, that's the big hope, because even that Nuggets game is a Sega Baba, a second game of a back-to-back. Yeah. So, and it's a travel game as well from Atlanta to Denver. So
that's a loss,
right? Yeah. So you can say that's a loss, but every other game is pretty much a win. Like, are they going to lose any of those other games, that's a real cupcake.
They're like the best team in the NBA at beating bad teams. That's how they win so many games every year. They're like 28-7 at home or something. That's preposterous.
One of those losses were against the Clippers without Gallo.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I don't really have too much else. You know, this is a very big week. The Clippers can hopefully go 3-1, probably even perhaps even 4-0. And I wouldn't say any of these games will be super exciting. It's possible they will. The Pacers game will probably be pretty fun. But there's a lot of basketball ahead and just a few weeks left in the season. But looks like the Clippers are making the playoffs.
I mean, just to mention the cap situation, Gallinari is pretty much making half of the team's cap. That's like half of the team's kind of settled cap for next year. He has $22 million. The next highest contracts are Lou Williams is $8 million and Trez is $6 million. And then it's just a lot of bargains with the rookies and the young kids. So it's not really enough for two max contracts. A lot of people, like talking heads like Stephen A. Smith, say two max contracts. That's not true. It's enough for a one max and some change. But you know, if they can trade Gallo, which some people feel like possibly they must have an inkling that maybe they can. And with Gallo's contract, honestly, he's playing above his contract right now. So if they could manage to trade Gallo, then they would have two max spots. But as of now, they have one max, and then they have room to maybe bring some players back, maybe on 1 year as they kind of reboot for another max guy next year. So they really only have about like $50 million settled right now as far as the salary cap goes. But they're very flexible for sure. So just kind of a heads up on that last question. And I think that'll do it for this episode of the Lob the Gem, the podcast. Anything left to say, Rob?
Nope. Just excited for the game tomorrow. Hope they get the win over the Nets. Nets are kind of fun. And the Clippers do need to come out hard because the Nets got destroyed today. I think they're going to be trying pretty hard for a win. They're still fighting for a playoff spot too.
Oh, I did kind of want to ask you, I was talking with a buddy about this. If you could sign somebody tomorrow for like a 4-year deal for whatever much, would you rather sign D'Angelo Russell or Kyrie Irving?
Kyrie Irving.
Not even a question?
Not even.
Oh, God.
I'm not even a Kyrie fan, but D'Angelo Russell has gotten really overrated this season. I think I was actually a huge fan of his as a prospect. When he's coming out of college, I thought he'd be really good, and I'm happy that he's had a career season, but it's very unsustainable. He doesn't get to the free throw line. Almost all the shots he's taking and making are jump shots. In the month of March, he's shooting, I literally just saw a tweet, he's shooting like 37% from the field, 27 from three. Obviously that's not going to continue, but there's going to be a regression to the mean. He's just not that good of a shooter. And yeah, I mean, for all of Kyrie's idiocy off the court and just lack of leadership and whatever, he's a special offensive player. D'Angelo Russell is not. And Kyrie is not young, but he's not that old. He's like 27, I think. So 4 years is still him firmly in his prime. Yeah, I mean, that's not even a remote question for me.
Right.
No.
Yeah, anyway, so that'll do that. And that'll do this episode of the Lob the Gem, the podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, leave some reviews and comments on whatever platform you listen to us on. And, of course, go Clippers!